You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome, citizens, to this day in history with Benjamin J. Goldson.
Never thought I'd get sick of that intro.
I haven't. It's so much fun.
It's beautiful.
You don't have to listen to it every week.
I come in
it's
a lot.
It's beautiful.
It doesn't have your name in it. Anyway, yes, this day in history, going back to 1972, for the murder of several Israeli athletes and their coaches at the Munich Olympics in West Germany in, I think I already said, 1972. So this took place after they'd been held captive. Terrorists from the group Black September, which had formed in 1970, and demanded the release of several hundred prisoners, Palestinian prisoners, held in Israeli jails. Israel said, no, we're not going to negotiate with you. So instead they tried to flee the country, and then it all went wrong at the airport and a bunch of people died. So this really stemmed from the foundation of Israel, which took place in the mid-century in 1947.
But it was the rising tension in Palestine that held world attention. Partition had brought a new flare-up in the strife between Arab and Jew. Politically, the conflict appeared to be settled. In actual fact, it had only just begun. The United Nations Special Committee had advocated separate Jewish and Arab states as the uneasy compromise. The plan was accepted by 33 votes to 13. Alexander Cadogan, Britain's representative, abstained. Prince Faisal of Saudi Arabia headed the Arab country's opposition. The Jewish state will include the ports of Haifa and Tel Aviv and the whole of the Negev Valley. The Arab will occupy the fertile eastern part. Jerusalem will come under United Nations trusteeship. First reaction from the Jews was one of joy. Crowds gathered in the streets and greeted the birth of their state with traditional dances. Britain's civic administration is expected to withdraw by May. Jews and Arabs will then govern themselves. Arab opposition to the partition scheme has been violent. The call for a holy war against the Jews went out from Cairo. A three-day general strike coincided with an intensive recruiting campaign. As in India, transfer of power in Palestine will bring bloodshed. Two states have been born. For the Holy Land, the immediate future would not bring peace.
So as the sort of Palestinian-Israeli conflict went on, the Palestinians continued to have their sort of land taken away from them and were pushed out into the neighbouring Arab countries, including Jordan, which was just over to the east of the sort of Israeli-Palestinian area. Well, in that Palestine, as it was then, doesn't really exist anymore,
right,
apart from in the minds of Palestinians, and according to some maps. But yeah, they all got pushed into Jordan, whose leader initially tolerated them in this idea of sort of Arab unity because he wanted to create this big pan-Arab state that would encompass much of the Middle East. So he thought, I can't really kick them out. But this was under King Hussein, who was also, despite his acceptance of the Fedayeen, as they were called, the Palestinian Freedom Fighters, he was still very close to the West, especially the United Kingdom.
A welcome relief indeed in hours of tension. Royal visitors were arriving at Victoria, and to greet them stood Her Majesty and the Duke of Edinburgh. King Hussein of Jordan had come to Britain on a 10-day state visit. His English-born consort, Princess Muna, accompanied him. 6 years ago, she was Miss Tony Gardiner. What a romance has been hers. Conspicuously absent from the welcoming party was the Prime Minister. Political affairs prevented him from being present. Mr. Michael Stewart and Mr. Roy Jenkins represented the government. King Hussein is no stranger to England. It was unfortunate that he arrived on what was surely the wettest and dreariest day this summer. Though the rain marred the state drive to the palace, the royal party travelled by open carriages, content with the protection of umbrellas. King Hussein came to his throne nearly 14 years ago when he was beset by enemies on all sides. Britain has always admired the courageous spirit that enabled him to surmount immense difficulties in his kingly role.
That was part one of This Day in History, and we will return after these messages.
95BFM presents Unknown Mortal Orchestra this Saturday, September 8th at the Auckland Town Hall. Unknown Mortal Orchestra this Saturday, September 8th at the Auckland Town Hall. All ages. Limited tickets still available from livenation.co.nz.
Hey, 95BFM, why are other radio stations so shit?
Because they're all run by Ayn Rand devil creatures.
Oh, you reckon?
Not 95BFM, we're a charity and we make that good, good content you crave with the help of generous people like you.
Me?
By signing up for a Simplicity B-card, you help keep BFM alive, independent and not shit. And as a thank you, you get sweet discounts from some of our mates. Ace, support independent media from as little as $4.20 a month with a Simplicity B-card. Go to 95bfm.com/signup.
At this radio station, we do our utmost to abide by the Broadcasting Standards Authority and their rules and guidelines. If you seriously think we've crossed the line on air, give us a call on 309 4831 within 20 working days of the broadcast date and tell us about it. We'll be able to help you out and tell you the procedure if you wish to make a formal complaint to the Broadcasting Standards Authority. Fuck knuckles, cock and piss. Balls. Thank you.
Yes, we now return to This Day in History. When we left off, Palestinian Fidian fighters had begun to gather in Jordan, launching attacks into Israel from there. However, this ran afoul of the king, Hussein, who ordered a military crackdown.
They are the new diaspora, refugees, exiles from Palestine. Many have lived out the years of Israel's nationhood in the squalor of the camps of Jordan and Syria, Gaza, Lebanon. Out of the misery of their sad quarter century, the Palestinians have developed a nationhood in exile, a politics of frustration. They are fueled by anger at the Israelis and disillusioned by those Arab brothers who they fear would abandon them to secure a settlement with Israel.
It was these Palestinians, after the Arab rout in the Six-Day War, these Fedayeen who picked up the fallen Arab banner. They vowed vengeance. While the armies of Egypt, Syria, Jordan reeled from their humiliation by the Israelis, the Palestinians began to train again, became the vanguard of a slowly reawakened Arab pride, folk heroes in the Arab world. There was no one unified group of Palestinian refugees. Instead, they splintered into a dozen different permutations and combinations, maybe more. Their politics, their strategies and tactics differed. They were together only in their vow to eradicate Israel and to return to their homes in the land they called Palestine. They had half a dozen leaders. Then one unlikely figure began to emerge from among the rest. Pudgy, unshaven, a Jerusalem-born engineer trained at Cairo University, Yasser Arafat became first among equals. He had been in on the beginning of a resistance group called Fatah, which means victory, in the middle 50s. Not until the late 60s did Fatah gain a real purchase in the Arab world. By the end of the decade, Arafat took over the leadership of the Palestine Liberation Organization, a group contrived to unify the assorted Palestinian factions. It was the exploits of Yasser Arafat's Fatah that first caught the imagination of the Western press. Operating from Jordan, they infiltrated the Israeli-occupied West Bank and Israel itself. The Fatah fighters swaggered through the streets of Amman, became a kind of occupying force inside King Hussein's capital. Hussein's Bedouin generals warned him of the ambitions of the Palestinians, told him he would have to defeat them in battle if he would survive. But he put off the confrontation of Arab against Arab. In mid-September 1970, the hijackers of PFLP, a small group of radical Palestinians who were plotting to overthrow the monarchy of Hussein, diverted three Western airliners to Dawson's Field in Jordan. And there, they blew them up. One from TWA, one from BOAC, one from Swissair. Hussein moved decisively against the Palestinians who were using his land as their own. Moved against 12,000 guerrillas and a Palestine People's Militia of 30,000 more. The battle for Amman raged a full 10 days. Slowly, the firepower of Hussein's forces, the artillery and tanks, took their toll. Street by street, house by house, the Jordanians hunted down the Palestinians, forced them out of the city, back into the hills. Thousands had been killed by the time a victorious Hussein signed a ceasefire with a humbled Arafat in Cairo. It was here that the Black September was spawned in September 1970. At refugee camps like this one all around Amman, the forces of King Hussein humiliated the People's Army of the Palestinians and broke them. And so the Palestine resistance, instead of sharing the government of Jordan, instead of having a long border with Israel across which their guerrillas could operate, the Palestine resistance was in confusion and despair. Out of their black bitterness in 1971, a fanatic group of Fatah terrorists determined to keep alive the spark of the resistance.
Yes, and the Black September organization would commit various attacks, but the one it's definitely most known for was the 1972 attack in Munich, which really, just aside from the Black September organization, really did put, I think, the Palestinian conflict on the map of the world map, and just the tactic of sort of let's go in, kill a bunch of people for no particular strategic reason. It just really grabbed a bunch of attention and really sort of defined modern terrorism in a way, at least in the
Despite a few bad decisions by judges, some disappointments and petty mistakes, the Munich Olympics were on the way to becoming the pleasantest Olympics because the West Germans worked to make them so. Today, one observer gave them a new name, the Bloody Olympics. Altogether, 17 people were slaughtered yesterday, two in the Olympic Village and the other 15 in the shootout at the airport. We begin a program devoted almost entirely to the Munich atrocity with a report on the shootout last night. ABC's Lou Choffey was there.
There are still a lot of questions to be answered about what happened last night at Fürstenfeldbruck Air Base. However, the German authorities admit that they tried to ambush the guerrillas and failed. The ambush was attempted soon after the guerrillas and their hostages arrived at the airport by helicopter. There, they were supposed to have boarded a German jetliner for a flight to an Arab nation. The German government says it was convinced that this would have meant certain death for the Israelis, and the decision was made to try to either disable or kill the guerrillas at the airport. They admit that police sharpshooters opened fire first. The guerrillas who were not hit then opened fire on the hostages. When it was over, all nine Israelis were dead. Five guerrillas were killed, three others captured. A German policeman also died. What made the tragedy seem even worse was the fact that for hours last night, there was a report that all of the Israelis had been liberated, a report which was not denied at the time. German authorities blame poor communications with the airbase, which was completely sealed off. One newspaper summed it up by saying, whatever the truth about the tragic events of last night, Germany will emerge a loser. Lou Chiappi, ABC News, Munich.
Yeah, so as I was saying before, I think it definitely wasn't the first terrorist attack or use of terror in the conflict, but it was certainly the one that I think got the most attention, and everyone sort of paid, you know, realized, oh, you can sort of get big results by doing this sort of thing. And I think it's really sort of was the prototype for much of the terrorism we see today.
Very interesting.
There was something else, if we have some time to fill. In 2012, Der Spiegel, which is a German sort of newspaper of note, sort of like the Guardian,
such a good name.
Yeah, I have no idea what it means.
I want a bagel now.
A bagel?
Well, that's more of a Jewish thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I had a bagel this morning. Linguistically, that's what it made me think of.
All right. Yeah, anyway, so this was saying that That the Black September terrorists may have actually had support from far-right German groups. It was always assumed that they'd been working with groups from the far left, but it has since come out that they had all these sort of weird relationships with neo-Nazis who were supplying them with guns, and possibly, again, with the sort of who were then attached to the intelligence services. So it's all sort of murky, spy, Cold War stuff.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.